So the pilots who fly the airlines, whether in a commercial capacity or in connection with the armed forces, have seen and will continue to see UFOs, but until the moronic governments of the world enlarge their attitudes, not much will be heard of those sightings. The Argentine government is surely one of the most enlightened in that they officially recognize the existence of UFOs. They were, in fact, the first country in the world to recognize UFOs as actualities. Other countries are afraid to permit any accurate information for various reasons. In the first case, the Christian belief seems to be that man is made in the image of God, and, as nothing is greater than God, nothing can be greater than man who is made in the image of God. And so if there is some sort of creature who can make a spaceship which can go through space, visiting different worlds, then that must be hushed up because the creature may not be in the shape of man. It's all distorted reasoning, but things will change in the not too distant future. Then the military clique cannot acknowledge the existence of UFOs, because to do so would be to admit that there is something more powerful than the military clique. The Russian dictators, for example, could not admit the existence of these UFOs, because to do so would lessen their own stature in the eyes of their people. Now all the good little commies, if there are any good commies, think that the leaders in Moscow are omnipotent, infallible, and the most wondrous things that ever appeared on earth. So if a little green man, 3 or 4 feet high, should be able to travel from world to world, and not all the resources of the great Moscow leaders could shoot down the little green man, then it would show that the little green man is more important than the communist powers, and that would never do for the communists. So, everything about UFOs is banned. People also say that if there were UFOs, the astronauts or cosmonauts or whatever they call themselves would have seen them. But that's not at all accurate, you know. Consider this: these fellows who have been in space have just been up a bit higher than any other humans on Earth. They have not really been in space, they have just been in a rarefied atmosphere. They are not in space until they go behind the Van Allen belt of radiation, and they are not truly in space until they have gone to the moon and come back. Further, saying that there are no UFOs because if there had been, the spacemen would have seen them, is much the same as saying, as you gaze out on the ocean, that there are no fish in the ocean, if there were you could see them. You get chilly looking fellows who sit by the side of the sea for hours trying to catch a fish. It's a full-time job with them, trying to catch a fish. And yet there are millions of fish in the sea. They are hard to see, though, aren't they, if you just take a glimpse at the ocean? In the same way, if you are shot up into the rarefied atmosphere 100 or so miles above the surface of the Earth, and you look out of a little hole in your tin can, well, you don't see a whole procession of UFOs. For one thing, you are too uncomfortable, and secondly, you don't have much of a view there. But wait a minute, though. If you have listened into the astronauts radioing back to Earth, you will have heard, or remembered, that there have been references to these UFOs seen by astronauts, but in all future replays that reference has been carefully censored and deleted. The astronaut in the enthusiasm of the moment has mentioned UFOs and also mentioned photographing UFOs, and yet in all later reports such references have been denied. It seems, then, that we are up against quite a bad plot, a plot to conceal a knowledge of what circles the Earth, a plot to conceal the very real existence of UFOs in the press and in various pseudo-scientific journals. There have been references to UFOs in the most scary terms: how wicked these things are, how dangerous, and how they do this or that, and how they have got a tremendous plot to take over the Earth. Don't believe a word of it. If the UFO people had wanted to take over the Earth, they could have done it centuries ago. The whole point is, they are afraid that they will have to take over the Earth, and they do not want to, if the Earth goes on releasing too much hard atomic radiation. These spacemen are the gardeners of the Earth. They are trying to save the Earth from the Earth people, and what a time they are having. There are reports of many different types of UFOs. Well, of course there are. There are many different types of aircraft upon the Earth. You can, for example, have a glider without any engine. You can have a monoplane or a biplane. You can have a one-seater aircraft or a 200-plus-seater aircraft, and if you don't want noisy aircraft, then presumably you could get a spherical gas balloon or one of those very interesting things made by Goodyear. So, if you had a procession of these contraptions flying over darkest Africa, the people there would be most amazed at the variety, and would no doubt think that they came from different cultures. In the same way, because some spacecraft are round, or ellipse-shaped, or cigar-shaped, or dumbbell-shaped, the uninformed person thinks they must come from different planets. Possibly some of them do, but it doesn't matter in the slightest because they are not belligerent, they are not hostile. They are manned by quite benevolent people. Most of these UFOs are of the same polarity as the people of the Earth, and so they can, if they wish, alight on the surface of the Earth or dive beneath the surface of the sea. But another type of UFO comes from the negative side and cannot come close to the Earth, perhaps I should say cannot come close to the Earth's surface, without disintegrating in a violent explosion with a tremendous clap of thunder, because these particular UFOs come from the world of antimatter. That is, the opposite type of world from this. Everything, you know, has its equal and opposite. You can say that there is a sex thing in planets, one is male and the other is female, one is positive and the other is negative, one is matter and the other is antimatter. So when you get reports of a tremendous explosion or see a vast fireball plunging to Earth and excavating a huge crater, you may guess that a UFO from an antimatter world has come here and crashed. There have been reports of so-called hostile acts by UFOs people, we are told, have been kidnapped. But do we have any proof whatever that anyone has really been harmed? After all, if you have a zoo and you want to examine a specimen, you pick up a specimen and bear it away. You examine it. You might test its blood, you may test its breath content, you could x-ray it and weigh it and measure it. No doubt all those things would appear to be very frightening and very tormenting to the ignorant animal involved. But the animal, when carefully replaced, is none the worse for this weighing and measuring, none the worse at all. In the same way, a gardener can examine a plant. He doesn't hurt the plant, he is not there to hurt plants, he is there to make them grow, make them better. So he examines the plant to see what can be done to improve it. In the same way the gardeners of the earth occasionally pick up a specimen, a man or a woman. Well, all right, so they measure a human, examine him or her, do a few tests, and then put the human back into the human surroundings. And he or she is none the worse off for it, it's only because they are scared silly that they think they are any the worse off. Usually, they are so frightened that they concoct the most horrible tales about what happened to them, when, actually, nothing unusual whatever happened. This world is being watched, and it has been watched since long, long before the dinosaurs thundered across the face of this earth. The world is being watched, and it will be watched for quite a time, and eventually the people of space will come down here. Not as tormentors, not as slave owners, but as benevolent teachers or guides. Various countries now send what they call a Peace Corps to what are alleged to be underdeveloped countries. These Peace Corps people who usually are in need of some form of excitement, or they can't get some other type of job, go out into jungles and teach backward people the things which they really do not need to know. Things which give them false ideas and false values. They get shown a film of perhaps some film star's marvelous palace in Hollywood and then they all get the idea that if they become Christians, or Peace Corps patrons, they also will have such a marvelous edifice in which to live, complete with swimming pool and naked dancing girls. When the people from space come here they will not behave like that. They will show people by example how they should go on, show them that wars are not necessary, show them a true religion which can be expressed in the words, do as you would be done by. Before much longer governments of the world will have to tell the truth about UFOs, will have to tell about peoples from outer space. They know already, but they really are scared to let the public know. But the sooner they do let the public know, the sooner it will be possible to adjust, to prepare, and to avoid any untoward incidents when our gardeners return to this world. People write to me about the so-called men in black. Well, that is newspaper, or journalistic license. It just means that there are outer space people here upon the Earth observing, recording, and planning. They are not here to cause trouble for anyone. They are here so that they may gain information with which they can best plan how to help the people of the Earth. Unfortunately, too many Earth people react like mad animals, and if they think they are being attacked, they go berserk. If one of these men in black, who may be dressed in any color, is attacked, then obviously he has to defend himself. But unfortunately, his defense is often distorted to appear to be an original attack when it's nothing of the sort. There are many types of UFOs, there are many shapes and sizes of people within those UFOs, but these people share one thing in common: they have lived a long time, longer than the people of Earth, and they have learned much. They have learned that warfare is childishness. They have learned that it is far better for people to get on together without all the quarreling. They have learned that Earth has apparently gone mad, and they want to do something to bring the people of Earth back to sanity, and to stop excessive atomic radiation. And if they cannot stop that peacefully, then Earth will have to be in quarantine for centuries to come, and that would hold up the spiritual development of great masses of people here. So, in conclusion, do not fear UFOs, for there is nothing to fear. Instead, open your mind to the knowledge that before too long the people of this Earth will have visitors from space who will not be belligerent but who will try to help us as we should help others. Chapter 5, If you could see the letters I receive, and keep on seeing them over more than a decade, you would come to one inescapable conclusion: readers are queer people. Not you, of course, but all the other readers, or rather some of them, because some are very, very nice indeed. One constant type of comment I get is that I should send more copies of my books free to public libraries. People write in and tell me they cannot afford the price for my paperback books, and they can only read, they tell me, if I supply them free to libraries. Well, I am not much in favor of that idea. An author makes his only living from royalties on books. If I write a book, I get 10% of the profit, 10% in some countries, 7% in others, and always on the lowest selling price. If a book is sent from England, where it is very low priced, to America, where it has to bear the cost of carriage, etc., I do not get the royalties on the higher American price. I get the royalties on the lower English price, royalties on the profit, mind you, after all expenses have been taken off by the publisher. I also have to pay an agent, or two agents, and sometimes from my 10% I have to pay 20% in agents' fees. Then there are taxes, and an author, all too frequently, encounters double taxation. That is, he pays full tax in one country, and then has to pay tax on the same sum in another country. And, believe me, that knocks all the gilt off the gingerbread, and you end up with hardly any bread at all. In addition, I have to pay quite a lot of other things: stationery, envelopes, stamps. And let MC remind you, also, that an author who answers letters is the worst paid man in the world. A buck navvy who leisurely digs a hole in a road is paid for his work, he is paid for his time. A lawyer is paid for his time and his skill, so is a doctor. But people write to an author, actually demanding this or that service, or this or that gift, and 9 times out of 10 they do not even enclose return postage. If they do, it is all too frequently postage from another country. For example, people in America who send stamped addressed envelopes, put American stamps on which, of course, cannot be used in a sovereign state such as Canada. So what is one to do then? Pay the cost of the stationery, the printing of the letter heading? Some letters have to be typed, that again costs money. And the postage has to be met. So, as you will agree, people write to an author and expect all for nothing. I actually had a person write to me and tell me that he had bought one of my books, as such he was entitled to my whole services, he told me. He said that he had read in the back of the book that I was asking people to write to me. It never entered his head that I was asking people not to write to me. As an author, I depend upon royalties, and if people borrow books from the public library, I do not get any payment. And yet the ones who borrow from a public library are the ones who are most demanding in their questions and requirements. I have had a person write to me and tell me that she had read one of my books, and you may now send me complimentary autographed copies of all your books, and I want an autographed photograph of you. What would you reply to that, dear reader? One gets various amusing incidents also. I am highly amused at the behavior of a little group of people in Adelaide, Australia. I call them the Apes of Adelaide. These are a little gang who have been in trouble, it seems, with the police. Now I had someone write to me, telling me various things in confidence, and asking did I recommend these people. I wrote back and said, no, I did not. Since then I have had dozens of obscene letters from these people, and every so often I get, perhaps, 9 or 10 which say, I hereby disconnect from you. It strikes me as rather amusing because we have never been connected, so how can one disconnect that which has never been connected? I am informed that this gang have a requirement now that anyone who joins them, poor unfortunate soul, has to put a name, any name, to one of these pre-typed slips and mail it off to me. Well, it's good for the postal authorities. It's also very good for the police, because I mail the whole lot back to the police at Adelaide, complete with the envelopes, so they can keep a file of these names and the handwriting, as those police have informed me they are investigating this little gang. I await developments with the greatest of interest. So, Apes of Adelaide, I send you my greetings, and I am still puzzled how we can be disconnected when we have never been connected. Another person in Vancouver wrote to a friend of his, who promptly informed me, saying that Lobsang Rampa could not be genuine because in one of his books he says he does not like the Irish tax collector. Yet another from Vancouver heard that I was poor, very poor, and this good lady promptly said that I was obviously a fake if I was poor, because if I was genuine money would come to me and I would be a millionaire. It did not occur to her, apparently, that there are some things more valuable than gold or diamonds. Actually, she is barking up the wrong tree, because a person who really can help others in the occult does not make a charge, he does not put things on a commercial basis. If people want to make a gift of money to help out, well, that is acceptable, but such people are rarer than hen's teeth. There are compensations, though. There are very many nice people who write. I have had a letter telling me that a noted seer is of the opinion, and has so stated publicly, that Lobsang Rampa has done more for the occult world than any other person on or off the earth. Quite a nice compliment, eh? Certainly it is one which I very greatly appreciate because, whatever some people think, I am trying to do a job in helping others know what all this is about, in this life and after this life. Yes, there are compensations, there are good people. More than a decade ago, when I first came to Canada, I had a letter from a woman and by psychometry I judged that this was a nice person and genuine. She asked if she could come and see me. Well, at that time I had a car, now I have a wheelchair, and I can't afford a car, so I decided that I would drive to her house and just give her a surprise. I did so, and I found a very nice woman indeed. Mrs. Valeria Sorok. During the past 10 years the friendship and personal liking between her and my family and I has grown to its present stage that she is accepted, not just as a friend, not just as someone who writes, but as one of the family. She writes, but we have met her on very many occasions, and wherever we have lived in Canada she has visited us. She even visited us when we were in Montevideo, in the country of Uruguay. Last night I had a really long distance call from Mrs. Valeria Sorok, a telephone call because those unmentionable male men are on strike here in Canada. So Mrs. Sorok made this telephone call, and she said that as I was writing another book she would like to have a few questions answered. So I wrote down her questions and I told her that I would answer her in this book if she agreed to have her name as the one asking the questions. By the way, Mrs. Sorok is a perfectionist in English who shudders so violently when she reads my distorted form of prose, and sometimes when she peruses proofs and sees grammatical errors, well, she turns positively pale. But now, let us send a greeting to Mrs. Valeria Sorok and deal with her questions. The first question is, how can one overcome fear? Fear? You must know what you fear. What do you fear? Do you fear the unknown? Until you know what it is that you fear, you cannot do anything about it. Fear is a harmful thing, it is a shameful thing, it is a thing which stultifies progress. How to overcome fear? The best way is to think of that thing which you fear. Think about it from all angles. What is it? Why should it affect you? What do you think it can do to you? Is it going to injure you physically? Is it going to injure you financially? Will it matter in 50 years' time? If you carefully analyze your feelings, if you carefully go into the subject of this "why do I fear?", you will surely come to realize that there is nothing to fear. I have yet to find anything which can make one fear if one really goes into the matter. Do you fear the police, or our old enemy the tax collector? Do you fear things in the astral world? Well, there's no need to, because I state most definitely that if you analyze this object, or this condition, or this circumstance which causes you to experience fear, you will see that it is a harmless thing after all. Do you fear poverty? Then what do you fear? Take it out of its dark closet. Is it your skeleton in the closet? Take it out, dust off the cobwebs, and look at the problem from all angles. You will find that fear vanishes, and always remember that if you do not fear, then nothing in this world or off this world can harm you. And believe me when I say that people off this world are a lot kinder than the people on this world. Now, we come to the second question, which is, how does one know when one is doing right? Every person, every entity on this world or off this world has a built-in sensor, a part of the mind which enables a person to know if he or she is doing right. If a person gets drunk or under the influence of drugs, the sensor is temporarily stunned, and the behavior of a person who is drunk or is under the influence of drugs can be very bad, and can be far worse than would be the case if the person's personal sensor was in working order. You can always tell when you are doing right. You feel right. If you are doing wrong, then you have an uneasy feeling that something is not as it should be. The best way to be sure of knowing if you are doing right or doing wrong is to practice meditation. If you wrap yourself in your meditation robe, you insulate yourself from the rest of the world, and your astral form can become disengaged from outside influence and can give you enlightenment direct from the over-self. If you meditate, you see, it's not just a lump of protoplasm giving you ideas. When you meditate, you actually receive confirmation of your good or bad from your over-self. And so I say to you, if you are in doubt, meditate, and then you will know the truth. Mrs. Saok, now you have asked me something. You ask, how can one develop extra sensory powers? Well, sad to say, some people never do. Just the same as some people can never paint a picture, some people cannot sing a song, or if they do, they are soon told to shut up. Some people cannot do ESP because they are so sure that they cannot do ESP, but if one is willing to try, ESP is easy. You cannot normally do the whole bunch, you know, telekinesis, telepathy, clairvoyance, clairaudience, psychometry, and the whole lot. If you've been trained in ESP from your seventh year up, then you can do it. But, assume now that you want to learn to do some form of ESP, we have to specify something, so let us say psychometry is your choice. You are anxious to practice psychometry. Well, you have to have exercises just as if you are learning to play the piano. You practice the scales, and you go on practicing those silly scales day after day, week after week. And even when you are an accomplished musician, you still have to practice scales. Let us get back, though, to this psychometry. You want to learn psychometry, so the best thing to do is to have a week or two just saying to yourself in a positive manner that you are going to be proficient at psychometry, or clairvoyance or clairaudience, or whatever it is you wish. You visualize yourself putting your hand, usually the left hand, on an object, and you visualize yourself getting a clear picture, or a clear impression about that object. For 1 or 2 weeks, then, you fill your waking hours with thoughts that you are definitely going to do this. Then, after perhaps 14 days, you wait until the mailman has been, and you take a letter which he has delivered, and you just gently rest your left hand upon it, before you open it, of course. Rest your left hand upon it. Close your eyes, and sit in any relaxed position. Let yourself imagine, later it will really be so, that you can feel some strange influence coming out from the envelope and tickling the palm of your hand and your fingers. By this time you should be getting some sort of sensation in your left hand. Well, just try to let your mind go blank, and see what sort of impression you get. First it will be crude, it will be utterly rudimentary. You can classify the letter as good or bad. You can classify it as friendly or unfriendly. Then open your letter and read it, and see if your impression was correct. If you were correct, then you will succeed rapidly, because nothing succeeds like success. First of all, try with just this one letter, that is on one day. Next day try two or three letters, or, if you wish, stick to one only. But this time try to feel what the letter is about. Persevere with it, and as you succeed you will go on to much better things. When you are proficient in psychometry, and it only takes practice, you will be able to actually visualize, or even actually see the person who wrote the letter, and you will know the gist of it without opening the envelope. It is a simple matter, and it merely needs practice. If you are learning to touch type and you peek at the keys, you are putting yourself back. You have to learn to type without looking at the keys, and as you make progress and hit the right keys in the right sequence, you get confidence and you can go faster. It's the same with psychometry. As you make correct guesses, which are really correct impressions, it strengthens your confidence, and with strengthened confidence you find that you are progressing faster and faster and becoming more and more accurate, and more detailed. It is hard work, though. You have to practice, and practice, and practice. And you have first to be alone when you are doing it, otherwise, if there are people about chattering like a load of monkeys, they will distract you and you will never do it. So, practice, and practice alone until you are proficient. And when you are proficient you can do it with your hands or your feet, or you can even sit on a letter and know what's inside. Still dealing with Mrs. Sook, we have her final questions. How can one make sure lessons are learned well enough so we don't have to come and start all over again? Believe me that when you get a lesson which you feel has sunk in, it has indeed sunk in. You want to remember that when you leave this world you leave all your money behind you, you leave your clothes behind you, and this low vibration physical body as well. But what actually goes with you in place of a bank account is all the good that you ever learned. So if you have had a lesson or two, that goes with you, and you have the results of that on the other side. Supposing you are having difficulty with some man, you decide on a certain course of action to bring him to heal, and then you weaken when the time comes for you to implement that course of action. Well, that sets up a negative, it sets up a black mark against you. If you have decided to do a certain thing which you believe to be right, then you must at all costs do that thing which you believe to be right. If you start to do it, and turn back, then it acts as a negative, it acts as a barrier, and as some great difficulty which later has to be overcome. To answer your question, then, how to make sure that you learn your lessons well enough so that you do not have to come here again? Decide upon what you believe is a correct course of action, and having decided upon that correct course of action, let nothing divert you from your course. Then you will be doing right, and you will not have to come and learn it all over again. You can also practice the old immortal law, do as you would be done by. If you do that, then you have learned the great law of all, and you do not have to come back and start all over again. So, let us say goodbye to Mrs. Valeria Sook on these questions, and turn to something else, shall we? Questions, questions, questions. All right, what is the next question? You write in your books about two Siamese cats, one called Kay and one called Fifi. What happened to them? The lady Kay is not upon this earth anymore. She was doing very well, but then I was the victim of a wholly unjustified, entirely unwarranted press attack, and the lady Kay, who, like me, had had a very hard life, was not able to put up with any more sorrow or persecution. And so the lady Kay passed away from this earth. I visit her in the astral and she visits me. Mrs. Fifi Grey Whiskers also has left this earth, but she was old and blind. She was gravely handicapped by the beastliness of humans. She is not handicapped no longer, for she can see. And she has a very, very sweet nature. I visit her, too, in the astral, and she visits me. These two have their representatives here, one island Miss Cleopatra, a seal point Siamese, and I must say that she is the most intelligent animal I have ever met. If one were awarding I,